This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio Show. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our website at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen live to our shows or to past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. If you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. Tonight's guest is Mary Shomon, an author of extraordinary caliber from all that I've been seeing in all of the books that she's written, a number of best-selling books on thyroid disease and weight loss, and a nationally known patient advocate. She also works with About.com and has founded and runs the Thyroid Info website, and also has published a really great newsletter called Sticking Out Our Necks. It's the only independent bi-monthly print newsletter on thyroid disease for patients. Mary is the author of numerous books, as I mentioned earlier, health books and educational matters. And her 204 book, The Thyroid Diet, Manage the Metabolism for Lasting Weight Loss. The book we're going to be discussing tonight is Living Well with Hypothyroidism. It's one of her newest books. Welcome, Mary. Thank you for being our guest tonight.
Thank you so much for having me on, Basma. It's a pleasure.
Oh, wow. There's so much to talk about here. First of all, your work is just amazing. It really is, Mary. And I know for a fact that I've run across some of your stuff in my the annals of my research through my own healing process. I'd like to ask you, Mary, how does patient advocacy work? I think that's an undervalued issue in the field of healthcare today.
Well, I think different people describe patient advocacy in different ways, and for me, what it means is that I, as a thyroid patient myself, turned around and decided that it wasn't enough for me to find out what would work for me or to try to wade through the various information to get the answers, but I also felt compelled for a variety of reasons to turn around and share that information with other people who might be going through the same challenges that I faced in getting properly diagnosed and then in getting properly treated. So for me, as a thyroid patient advocate, I've kind of really looked at making sure that I'm out there trying to spread the word, helping people become aware of thyroid disease, and helping people understand then, once you have a thyroid condition, what you can do about it.
Now, you believe that thyroid disease is a lot more prevalent than most people believe, Mary.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the standard number right now, I think that's commonly accepted by a lot of the general idea of you know, general statistics is that there may be 13 to 15 million thyroid patients. But with some new numbers coming in and a lot of doctors are coming up with additional estimates, they're saying that as many as 60 million Americans have a thyroid condition. And the vast majority of them are undiagnosed, so they're walking around with symptoms and not being treated. They don't even know they have a problem. And among those who are not are even diagnosed, the people that know they have a thyroid condition are actually people who are not feeling well still because they're not necessarily getting the best possible treatment for their thyroid. So we have a lot of people out there that are struggling with thyroid issues, and unfortunately a lot of them don't even realize and need to be more educated because they don't know they've got the problem in the first place.
Well, how does advocacy and informing doctors that just the exhibition of certain symptomology is enough to warrant testing for thyroid disease?
Well, this is one of the challenges that we have as patients, because thyroid symptoms can oftentimes be very vague, or they can mimic a lot of other problems. So people will be complaining about feeling particularly tired, or they feel a little foggy-brained. They may be a little bit depressed or a little bit anxious. They may be having weight problems or feeling like they're having a tough time losing weight. And when we go in and complain to the doctors of these kinds of symptoms, a lot of times we're sent packing with a Prozac prescription instead of testing for a thyroid condition or an evaluation of our hormone levels. So it's something that we really need to, I think, ask for specifically. And so the more aware patients are that these symptoms may point to a thyroid issue, the more likely we are to go into the doctor's office and say, hey, doc, I really would like to have my thyroid evaluated.
Well, let me ask you, Mary. I know for myself, I know what's involved in this, but what exactly is involved in diagnosing thyroid disease for those of our listeners that don't know?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask a conventional physician what is involved in diagnosing thyroid disease, they will tell you that a blood test, a single blood test called the TSH test, which is the thyroid stimulating hormone test, will be able to diagnose pretty much all problems with thyroid. If you ask an integrative physician and some of the old-time doctors who really understand thyroid issues, they're going to tell you that diagnosing a thyroid problem involves a lot of different factors. One of them would be a very good clinical exam. They're going to feel your thyroid, look for enlargement. They're going to look at signs and symptoms on your body. They're going to look for things like the loss of the outer edge of your eyebrows, which is a classic thyroid symptom that many people aren't aware of. They're going to look for puffiness in the hands, the feet, the face. They're going to look for a variety of other clinical symptoms, including blood pressure changes, heart changes, changes to your eyes that may be signs that you have a thyroid condition. They'll also do that TSH test that we mentioned, but they'll probably also do a free T4, free T3, which are some measures of the actual thyroid hormones. They'll probably also look at your thyroid antibody levels, which can tell us whether there's autoimmune thyroid disease in the picture. And they'll also look at your family history, your symptoms, your history of autoimmune disease in your family, as well as other thyroid issues in the family. And hopefully they're going to put all this together, the symptoms, the medical history, the family history, blood tests, and clinical observations, to be able to make that diagnosis of thyroid disease.
Well, I can tell you from someone that has had, I have Hashimoto's.
Mm-hmm.
When I was first diagnosed with Hashimoto's, the average TSH level of an average person is 10.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was at 10 million.
Oh, my gosh.
I have it was a highly unusual case.
Yes,
and when I came, and I'll be quite honest with you, even going to endocrinologists, some of the most learned people, the first endocrinologist that actually diagnosed me with Hashimoto's was actually a teaching physician, and even he did little more than, the most that they did at the time was to determine, because I was developing a goiter, they sent me in for an ultrasound of the thyroid.
Uh-huh.
And they tested my TSH levels, and that was it. They put me on therapy, on the hormone replacement therapy, and there I went off thinking I was healed.
Unfortunately, your story is very common, and it's really, I think, how a lot of people end up coming to the point where they really feel like they need to learn more about thyroid disease, because we are very often just told, okay, you know, take this pill, come back in a year, you'll be fine, and that's the extent of what we get as far as information. And what we don't realize is the thyroid is so fundamental to every aspect of our overall health and wellness, and so there's so many different factors involved in this, and so it's not very likely that one simple test, one simple pill is going to be a one-size-fits-all solution for everyone.
Absolutely. Mary, you know, you've talked about some of the symptoms, but, you know, of underactive thyroids. There's also what a lot of people don't know is a hyperactive thyroid
yes.
condition.
Yes, exactly.
And it works in the opposite initially, but then ultimately everybody that's hyperthyroid ultimately will probably end up being hypothyroid due to either the removal of the thyroid or various factors that come into play. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Sure. Hyperthyroidism is less common than the hypothyroidism, but it certainly is a factor. There's several million people in America that are estimated to have this problem, and it's an overactive thyroid. It's almost always caused by Graves' disease, which is an autoimmune disease that makes the thyroid actually become overactive. In some cases, people can have nodules or an enlargement of the thyroid, but most often it's this autoimmune disease that causes the problem. And with hyperthyroidism, we have a speeding metabolism, and all of the body functions become faster. So we have anxiety, nervousness, rapid heart rate, high blood pressure in some cases. People can have diarrhea due to very rapid transit in their bowels. They may have sweating, high body temperature, increased perspiration or intolerance to heat. They may feel very nervous. They may even have a tremor in their hands. People will oftentimes notice hair loss. They very often have a difficult time sleeping. They may have insomnia. So it really represents a speeding up of almost every process in the body, and it's a very difficult, very uncomfortable situation. People oftentimes lose weight very quickly. In fact, a lot of people are actually misdiagnosed when they're in the throes of early hyperthyroidism as being either anorexic or having panic disorder, because the symptoms can seem to be much like those other more understood conditions.
You know, with so many different factors, I find it unusual that doctors are more prone to diagnose people with some kind of a mental disorder as opposed to investigating further and making sure that there isn't a clinical disorder that's going on.
Well, it's a good question. It's a good issue, and it's one that I've been trying to sort of figure out for quite a long time. And I think the issue is, to some extent, that thyroid disease tends to affect women far more often than men. You're talking about 7 to 10 times more often affecting women than men. And I think when women go in and are complaining about these kinds of symptoms, it's very easy for us to be overlooked, or we also oftentimes go in and we talk to doctors sometimes like we're talking to our friends. So we go in and we say, oh, I don't feel well, I'm gaining weight, I'm tired, I'm dragging around. And the doctors hear someone complaining about emotional issues, and then they make a jump into thinking that this may be some sort of mental health issue. Whereas I think if we were to go in and be very quantified about our complaints, I've gained X number of pounds on a diet of X calories a day, I'm requiring X minutes more of sleep every day, if you can be more specific with the doctors, it sometimes is a little bit easier to get them to take the symptoms more seriously and not automatically assume that this is some mental health issue or that you need to walk off with a prescription because you're having stress, depression, or PMS, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's why I enjoyed your book quite a bit. It's almost set up as a manual-type book that actually has a step-by-step process of dealing with not only the issues and the understanding of hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism, thyroid disease, but you also how to deal with doctors, what questions to ask, how to personally take care of yourself and become your own patient advocate, so to speak, alternative methodologies, and on. Some of the information here is really overwhelming, things that I had never heard, and I'm very fastidious in my research, and there are some things in here that I was really surprised by.
Yeah, there's a lot to know about thyroid disease, and you know what I've tried to do with the book is to put as much practical information that people need to know when they have a thyroid condition, because so many of us, the doctor's office calls and says, well, you have a thyroid problem, we've called in a prescription for you, and go pick it up. And that's the extent of our patient education process when it comes to a thyroid problem. And we may look at the insert they give us at the drugstore, but that's as much as we're going to get. And there's so much more to know about the medications, the options, the treatment, how to fine-tune the overall process, and how to really live and feel well. I mean, you were saying some of the things that patients don't know, and one thing that so many people don't know is that taking any vitamins or supplements or foods that have high amounts of iron or calcium alongside your thyroid medicine can actually interfere with your body's ability to use the thyroid medicine and make it almost ineffective. So a lot of us are taking calcium-fortified orange juice, and we think that we're doing good things for ourselves and our bones, and we may take our vitamins and morning pills with that glass of orange juice. But if you're a thyroid patient, that's something you need to know. You're not going to take your pills with your calcium juice, because it could pretty much make your medicine ineffective. So these are the kinds of things that I've tried to include in the book so that people really understand the day-to-day practical aspects of living with a thyroid condition and living with long-term thyroid therapy.
Well, you know, a lot of the other things that you discussed, too, there's a lot of alternative practices that you're discussing in there. What kind of research goes into determining what alternative? I mean, obviously, we don't have the blind studies available that we would hope to have still to this day, which is, I think, ridiculous. After all of the important information that is out about holistic methodologies and herbal healing for various diseases, not only thyroid disease. How do you determine what you would like to recommend or what you're going to stand behind in your book?
Well, I talk with a number of practitioners, and I've gone around the country and found some of the best integrative and complementary physicians who are working with thousands of thyroid patients, and found out what they are using in practice, what's working for them, what types of approaches have they found effective. I've looked at a lot of the studies from around the world as well, because there's a lot of different things that are being done. But as you said, the problem with some of the alternative and complementary approaches to any health issues is that we simply don't have double-blind, peer-reviewed, journal-published articles that are satisfying to the most conventional physicians. So to that end, what I try to do is find some of the best alternative practitioners who have, well-respected reputations and who are working with a lot of thyroid patients. The reality is a lot of thyroid problems do require some conventional medicine. A lot of people who have thyroid issues are never going to be able to stay away from prescription medicines. But what we will be able to do is either reduce the amount of prescription medicines we're taking or to get rid of side symptoms and additional problems that we're struggling with using a combination of conventional and holistic approaches. So in my opinion, the integrative approach, integrating the best of all worlds, is usually going to be the most effective for thyroid patients.
Well, I think that was one of the ways that I learned myself on a personal level. And I refer to myself because I've dealt with a lot of healing issues. And I've been a firsthand recipient of the kind of treatment that patients get, both in traditional scenarios, both historically, because I've been dealing with hypothyroidism since I was like 20 years old, and even today as the health care systems are changing, how alternative care is starting to actually show its face on the scene. People are taking a more active role in their own healing process. People are becoming more informed. So one of the things, though, that I found to be very interesting was in one section where you discussed antibiotic therapy on that. You know, as a Hashimoto's patient, I had my own, and this was just something that I had thought about throughout the years. I believe that I had been, due to doctors' misguidance way back in the days, that I was over-medicated on antibiotics. And shortly after that, I started to develop the symptomology of hormone disease. And here in the antibiotic therapy section, you discuss how there is a doctor that, or some doctors, like one of them is David Brownstein, who says that he believes that a lot of the thyroid disorders have signs of infection, and that the infection is generally actually in the thyroid. Do you know a little bit of, can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, yeah, we're looking at a lot of different possible causes for some of the autoimmune forms of thyroid disease, and certainly viral, bacterial, and even stealth pathogen and mycoplasma-like infections are increasingly being studied as possible culprits in as triggers for some of these autoimmune diseases, including thyroid. We definitely know that there's some research that connects some of the foodborne infections, like Yersinia infections, to development of thyroid disease. And we also know that some of the viruses that have developed, like the mononucleosis virus, the Epstein-Barr virus, is also linked in some cases to the onset of some autoimmune diseases, including thyroid. So there's definitely a lot more, study being looked at, and David Brownstein is one of the folks that's really doing some pioneering work with the use of low-dose antibiotic therapy. He's also had good success with that with rheumatoid arthritis, another form of autoimmune disease. His theory is that there is some mycoplasma or very small, very difficult to detect pathogen that's actually causing the inflammatory reaction in people who have a tendency towards autoimmune disease. So there's a lot of really interesting theories going on that are looking for the causes, but unfortunately with autoimmune disease, there's probably no one smoking gun. There's going to be a lot of different factors that are all coming together in sort of a perfect storm in each individual who is either predisposed or is exposed to toxins or has illnesses or stressors. There's so many different factors that come into play that are the triggers for thyroid disease and for all the other autoimmune conditions as well.
Well, I find that they kind of go hand in hand with each other, autoimmune conditions, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, thyroid disease. It's easy for me to say hypothyroidism, but I don't want to exclude the hyper because being hypothyroid, I've used that term a lot, so it just comes naturally to me. But, it seems to me that these things tend to come in clumps. You don't just get one autoimmune condition. You end up generally, and I've talked to a lot of people that have been victims of fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue, and I find that they kind of just go hand in hand. Am I mistaken there, Mary?
No, not at all. In fact, there are actually some doctors who believe that chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and hypothyroidism are all just different types of symptoms of the same underlying problem. And that just, depending on your physiology, it may manifest in pain in fibromyalgia or in fatigue, in chronic fatigue, or in a combination of those kinds of symptoms as in hypothyroidism. There's also some question as to whether chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia are actually autoimmune. Some organizations classify them as such. Others say no. So it's kind of a controversy right now as to whether or not they fall into that category. But we definitely know that anyone with an autoimmune condition is at risk of developing other autoimmune diseases as well. So we see people with Graves' disease or Hashimoto's disease very often will also have some vitiligo or some psoriasis. They may develop some rheumatoid arthritis at times. We see higher incidence of MS in people. We see alopecia, the hair loss, a condition that involves hair loss. So we definitely see a fair amount of crossover with the different autoimmune diseases, and in particular with thyroid patients who have autoimmune problems. Another one that's a very common autoimmune crossover is Sjogren's syndrome, because a lot of thyroid patients have dry eye and dry mouth, which is a very characteristic autoimmune problem as well.
My sister has just been diagnosed with Sjogren's syndrome.
You definitely have some autoimmune things going on in the family then when you see that showing up in two sisters. And it's a good point to remember, too. We're all, very often we're aware of our family's cancer history, but how often have you gone into a doctor's office for a medical checkup or a physical and had them ask you if you have a family history of autoimmune disease? A lot of people wouldn't even know the answer to that question. But yet, if you have someone in the family that has one of these conditions, then all the other members of the immediate family, the siblings, the parents, the children, are at an increased risk of any one of the family of autoimmune conditions. So it's definitely something that people want to be aware of as part of their medical history.
For those of our listeners who have just joined us, we are speaking with Mary Schulman patient advocate and author extraordinaire. She's written The Thyroid Diet, Living Well with Hypothyroidism, which is the book that we're discussing this evening, Living Well with Autoimmune Disease, Living Well with Chronic Fatigue and Fibromyalgia, so there and others, many, many others, plus a newsletter, and she also is the founder of the Thyroid website, which is voluminous in its information. I found it to be absolutely wonderful. Let me ask you, what do you think about, now I know that, again, going to my endocrinologist, my ex-endocrinologist, I had discussed with him the issue of basal thermometer readings, and I know for some time that there's been a lot of controversy around those. How do you feel about the readings that one gleans from the basal thermometer?
Well, basal body temperature, which is the temperature that you take when you're first waking up in the morning without moving around, without doing a lot of activity, which then raises the temp, is one form of monitoring for metabolism. So some doctors believe that measuring this basal body temperature, if the temperature shows up as chronically low, and that's typically less than 97.6 upon waking, that that may be indicative of an underlying thyroid problem or a hypothyroidism. So some doctors consider it as a diagnostic factor or as information that is valuable as part of making a diagnosis. Some doctors actually believe they can diagnose based on that, and I think that that may be a little bit too one-size-fits-all, because we also have people with hypothyroidism and thyroid issues who have a chronically elevated body temperature due to low-grade infection. So I don't think that you can't exclude a thyroid problem using basal temperature, but it certainly is one factor that people can use as a way to self-monitor to tell whether or not they may, in fact, have a slowed metabolism, and low body temperature is considered one factor, definitely.
Well, you know, we've got we have a question from one of our listeners. Lana from Iowa asks, is there an advantage to taking thyroid medication in the morning instead of at night, and how often should you get your blood tested while your level is being regulated?
Okay. Well, the morning versus night is a really interesting question, because it's the standard wisdom that you'll hear from your doctors is that you should take your thyroid medicine in the morning on an empty stomach and allow yourself at least an hour or so before you eat anything or before you drink any coffee or take any other supplements that can interfere with your thyroid absorption. And so that's been the conventional wisdom for years. But some studies recently have shown that if you take your thyroid medicine at night, and this would be synthetic thyroid medicine, the T4 synthetics like Synthroid or Levoxyl, that you actually can get better absorption and a better effect of the medication, because it goes through the intestinal system much more slowly and the absorption is better. So some doctors are now recommending that people take their thyroid medication in the evening rather than in the morning in order to maximize their benefit from the medicine. Now, this doesn't necessarily apply to people that are taking the T3 medications, because T3 is much faster acting, so that would be the medicines like Cytomel, time-release T3, Thyrolar, or Armour Thyroid, Desiccated Thyroid, Nature Thyroid, those types of drugs. Because if you take them at night, some people find that taking a medicine like that at night may actually prevent them from sleeping, although some patients find that taking a little dose of T3 in the evening actually helps them get a better night's sleep. It's one of those things where your mileage may vary depending on how you respond to the medicines. As far as the question of how often to get your blood checked while you're getting regulated, my philosophy is really as often as necessary until you really start to feel like you are at a point where you're starting to get regulated and feeling well. Some doctors will tell you to come back in 6 months or a year. My theory is, you know, I would want to go back every 6 to 8 weeks until I feel like I'm at a point where I'm really getting stabilized. Of course, that's assuming and basing the assumption on that we're treating using the TSH levels or the thyroid blood levels as the sole arbiter. So some doctors will use them basically to check in periodically to see that you're not substantially hypothyroid or hyperthyroid, but really are going to titrate that dose. They're going to modify your thyroid dose primarily based on how your symptoms are. So, and that would be, you know, the more innovative way. The more conventional practitioners, however, are probably going to monitor your TSH very religiously and use that as the way to decide whether your dosage should go up or down.
Well, let me ask you, you know, I know for a fact that my basal thermometer readings have always been significantly low. And if I go to doctors, that's the key problem. You end up, and this is, I think, the problem that I think a lot of people that go into alternative healing are having trouble with, is a lot of times initially you start to medicate yourself almost. And the reason you're doing that is because you know there's something missing. You know that there is something out there. And you start to work with, I know for initially when I started this 20 years ago, and started my path to understanding, how holistic, healing would be, or alternative practices and therapies would enhance my health and my healing. You didn't find the doctors out there that did this, and you started working with the natural thyroids that you got over the counter, and you played with a little bit here. And I'm still taking Catafil 12, I think it is. I got so many things over there that I forget which ones they are. But, you know, I find that I have to regulate myself, and I think that's a key component of a lot of the healings, is that people will know when they feel good. And no matter how many times I've gone back to doctors, Mary, and I've told them, I'm dismissed. I'm told, no, you're fine. Your TSH levels are actually a little bit higher than they should be, which to me makes me think that I probably need some T3 going on, or some of the natural hormones.
Well, this is one of the challenges of thyroid treatment, and it's in part one of the reasons that I'm out here trying to speak so vocally to people, because the conventional endocrinology approach to thyroid treatment is really to manage by the numbers. And, you know, there's a normal range, and if you fall into it, then as far as they're concerned, your problem is not thyroid. And, you know, the problem with that is that really, it's becoming accountants. They're becoming numbers crunchers instead of doctors. The art of medicine is being lost. And frankly, if everyone fits into a nice, neat little chart, then, you know, I don't know exactly how why we would even need experts anyway, because if everyone, you know, either gets a medicine or doesn't based on what the numbers are, then that doesn't really require a lot of training or skill. You know, the issue is, I think, more and more patients going outside the traditional endocrinology model to go to OBGYNs and holistic doctors, holistic MDs, naturopathic physicians, hormone experts, anti-aging docs, docs that work with bioidentical hormones, to really find the doctors that are willing to sit down, listen, and understand that the best possible thyroid treatment for each patient is the one that safely makes them feel well. It's not simply just getting them to a number on a chart. And that's, in a lot of ways, it's become my rallying cry, is we're patients, not lab values. Because I don't want a doctor looking at a lab test and saying, well, your TSH is fine. All of your problems have nothing to do with thyroid disease. Because the reality is, yes, the reality is that's not true. And then, you know, one important thing that people also need to be aware of is that there isn't even agreement on the part of classical endocrinologists, the most conventional endocrinologists, as to what a normal TSH is. So they call this a gold standard. They say everybody's got to take this test and this is how we diagnose and treat. But they can't even agree among themselves what the normal range is. So I could go out and have a TSH test tomorrow and go to one endocrinologist's office with a TSH of 4.5, and that doctor is going to say, oh, you're hypothyroid, I'm going to treat you, let's get you started. I could walk across the hall to another equally qualified endocrinologist with a 4.5 TSH, and that guy's going to tell me, you don't have a thyroid problem, honey, you must be depressed or stressed. So, you know, this is not science. So this is one of the things that really, it kind of gets me angry, because if they want to stick to the science, that's fine, but then they have to at least get onto the same page, and they're not even on the same page with it. So when you've got tests that, you know, people getting different results and looking at it differently, interpreting it differently, that's telling us then that we really need to go outside the dogma to get to the real information.
Well, I'll tell you, I think you tagged it right there when you said that it isn't real science. And I often wonder to myself, I am perfectly accepting of traditional healing and complementary healing. I really believe that. But ultimately, if it's not either one, if it isn't real science, and they're just using this, like you said, these gold standards or what they think is normal or what they've been taught 15 years ago in medical school, and they haven't integrated any of the newer information or the new modalities in working with these kinds of things, then is it really science? And at that point, aren't we becoming victimized by some of these doctors, Mary?
Exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. We are being victimized by these doctors because they need to be looking at the bigger picture. They need to be practicing the complete, you know, art of medicine. They need to be looking not only at the test results, but they need to understand what the latest interpretation of those test results really is, and they need to be looking at the bigger picture. I mean, if a woman walks into a doctor's office with a huge goiter, you know, an enlarged thyroid, a family history a mile long, a symptoms list, you know, 10 pages long, and her TSH is 4.99999, and this doctor uses 5 as the cutoff, you know, there has to be some common sense into the decision-making process. They can't just use it all by the numbers. It's not as easy as just being able to classify everyone into categories of numbers. And unfortunately, some of the doctors out there are trying to do just that, and that is leaving a lot of people struggling with a whole host of side effects, symptoms, and problems. I mean, one of the things, for example, that is a particular issue for a lot of women with hypothyroidism is fertility. And when your thyroid is underactive and you're not being properly managed, it's very difficult to get pregnant for some women. And you know that a lot of the top-end fertility clinics, these are the places that are charging $10,000 a month for in vitro fertilization and all sorts of assisted reproduction, they don't even include thyroid testing as part of their basic workup for a woman for infertility. And this to me is, you know, this is an example of really not paying attention to what's going on out there. And in some cases, it's probably an example of trying to make money off of people's lack of knowledge of some very basic factors that affect our health and affect our fertility for that matter.
Well, we're going to have to take a little break right now, Mary, but we'll be back in a few minutes. We do have some more questions from our listeners. This is Mary Shulman. She is the author of the book that we are discussing tonight, Living Well with Hypothyroidism, among many other books, and we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to bbsradio.com. Don't forget to tune in to the Infinite Consciousness.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the People Speak radio show. Our guest tonight is Mary Schulman, author of an incredible number of books on healing everything from hypothyroidism or living with, well with, a lot of autoimmune diseases and conditions. Thank you, Mary, again for being with us. You know, Mary, I'll tell you one thing. If you want to write a book, you can do this. Write a book and list all of the doctors that will listen to you in this country.
Well, actually, the interesting thing is I do maintain a directory of top thyroid doctors online. And it's free for people to get to access, and it is a patient-oriented directory. So it's basically patients writing in to recommend their doctors as being knowledgeable or savvy or in the know about thyroid disease. So people can, you know, Google top doctors directory for thyroid, or they can go over to my website at thyroid-info.com, and they'll find the directory online there, and they'll be able to find by state and by area of the world all the doctors that patients are recommending as being the really great doctors that get it.
Okay, there you go, guys. Now, see, ask and you shall receive. There's nothing will ever change. This is just wonderful. You know, we have a toll-free number. You guys can call in and talk to Mary if you'd like, 877-489-6350, or call 888-228-4494. And once again, those numbers are 877-489-6350, 888-228-4494, and they're both toll-free numbers. We've got some questions from our listeners for you, Mary. Mike in California asks, I have read that fluoride may cause or trigger hypothyroidism. Doesn't that mean the public is unaware of the great risks with fluoridated water and toothpaste?
Well, Mike brings up a very good point, because in past years, fluoride was actually used as an anti-thyroid drug. It was used as a medication to slow the thyroid down when it was overactive, when someone was suffering from hyperthyroidism. So a lot of people don't realize that fluoride actually had this medicinal property. There is a lot of evidence that excess exposure to ingested fluoride, so that would be fluoride that you're taking in via drinking, may be contributing factor to the increase in thyroid problems and a risk of thyroid conditions in some people. I am less concerned about toothpaste and topical fluoride because we're not ingesting it. But I am concerned about fluoridated water, and I will not drink fluoridated water myself, and I don't have my children drink it as well. So it's becoming more of an issue in a lot of areas, especially around the world, where municipalities and areas and regions are now stopping the fluoridation because of the side effects that it seems to have on the thyroid, as well as some of the other negative side effects without some of the proven benefits that are often touted. Fluoride ultimately is an industrial waste product, and they're dumping it into our water supply, and so it's something that we need to really consider whether or not we want to be ingesting that.
Well, I always thought about ingesting industrial waste products, and I probably would decide against it.
Well, this is why we see more people turning against fluoride for their communities as well.
I guess they've got every reason to. Here's a question from Julie from Colorado. Asks, are there any good supplements or foods that you would recommend to boost thyroid function?
Good question. One of the things that we want to make sure for somebody with a thyroid condition is that they are getting enough iodine. And with iodine, it's a double-edged sword. We want to make sure you're getting enough iodine, but you don't want too much iodine. We're starting to see an increase in iodine deficiency, and iodine is the building block for all thyroid hormone production. So if we don't have enough iodine, we can't produce thyroid hormones. So insufficient iodine levels can make us hypothyroid. But too much iodine can make you have an aggravated thyroid. It can increase thyroiditis and inflammation. So one of the things we want to do is really make sure that we're getting the right amount of iodine in our diet, and that usually includes an iodine supplement for a lot of people, particularly people in the middle of the country or people who don't use iodized salt or people who don't eat a lot of seafood. They're going to want to take a look at the possibility of using maybe some a low level of iodine in their vitamin or mineral supplement. Also, tyrosine is a very helpful amino acid, which is used as part of the process of conversion for thyroid hormones. So some people find that supplementing with a small amount of tyrosine can be helpful. The B vitamins and zinc are very important for thyroid metabolism, so we want to make sure that we're getting enough B vitamins and zinc. So these are important vitamins as well. And then, of course, there are a whole host of other types of herbs and supplements, Chinese remedies, Ayurvedic medicines, and vitamins, and other types of alternative and holistic and nutritional support that can help some of the side effects and symptoms that we may still be struggling with, everything from sleep problems to weight gain, etc. And those, you know, there's a whole laundry list of those. I've gone into those in greater depth in the book, Living Well with Hypothyroidism, to help people kind of go through the very, you know, there's probably 40 or 50 different supplements that people might want to think about, depending on their particular symptoms.
Get the book, people. It's really a phenomenal book. And or go to the website as well, because there's a lot of great stuff there. We have a caller on the line, Mary. Caller, your name and your question for Mary.
Hi, Mark from Florida. Mary, my question is, what about selenium as a supplement for keeping a healthy thyroid? And do you know what the prolonged effects are if you do not have you have hypothyroidism and it goes unchecked or untreated? Thank you.
Okay. That was great. Mike caught the one I forgot to mention, selenium, which is a mineral that is very important for healthy thyroid function. It also is increasingly being shown to have the ability to help calm down the antibodies in some cases of autoimmune thyroid disease. So some people are finding that it's helpful, especially with the Hashimoto's disease, to help really calm things down. So we're starting to see selenium, but people have to be very careful because too much selenium can be toxic. So you don't want to take more than 200 to 400 micrograms. That's MCG, not milligrams, but micrograms. So it's a very tiny dosage of selenium that seems to be a help. And if you're already taking a multi that has selenium in it, make sure you're not adding additional selenium on top of it. You only want to take it if you're not getting it any other way. As far as let's see, now what was Mike's other question?
Mike, are you still with us?
Did we lose him?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
I'm so engrossed in listening to you. I forgot his other question.
I lost the second question. I got so focused on talking about the selenium that I forgot what the second question
was.
Well,
this is a perfect reason for Mike to go out and get the book, because this is important stuff. Julie from Colorado asks a question. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that we already took Julie's. This is Jackie from Texas.
Okay.
I've been on Tegretol for 17 years, and I was recently diagnosed with hypothyroidism. I've read that Tegretol and other seizure medicines can suppress or affect your thyroid function. Can medications cause hypothyroidism? And if so, can it be reversed if I switch medications?
Good question. There are a number of medications, including the seizure medicines, also lithium, which is used for bipolar and manic depression, some of the heart medicines, amiodarone. So we've got a variety of medicines that can, in some cases, cause a thyroid problem. In some cases, if it's the instigating or the trigger factor for autoimmune thyroid disease, it may not be reversible. In other cases, being able to kind of come back off and wean off of a particular medicine may be enough to reverse the thyroid issue. So it's really a case-by-case situation depending on the person and on whether or not it's been a long-running issue of thyroid issues and whether or not it has triggered a full-scale case of autoimmune thyroid disease.
Mm. Well, you know, here we are, and then I often wonder sometimes if people are actually listening to our guests. Obviously, our board director, Seth, was listening because he just texted me with the message that the latter part of Mike's question, Mike from Florida, was, what is the long-term effects of untreated hypothyroid? So here you go. People are listening to you, Mary.
Great. One of the long-term effects of untreated hypothyroidism is memory problems. So in that case, we want to make sure that I got to get my thyroid treatment checked here. Long-term untreated hypothyroidism can be very dangerous. It can cause obesity. It can raise cholesterol levels and damage the heart to the extent that it can put the someone at risk of a heart attack or heart problems. It can cause extreme depression, chronic long-term depression. It can affect. It can cause minimal sex drive. It can cause infertility or chronic miscarriage in a woman of childbearing age. And ultimately, in the past, before we had thyroid treatments 100 and some years ago, if someone had long-term untreated hypothyroidism, ultimately it could in fact kill them because it would cause gradual destruction of the heart muscle and slow down of the heart to the extent that people would eventually go into a coma. These days we don't see too many people, at least in Western areas, that are going without any thyroid treatment whatsoever. But even undertreated hypothyroidism, thyroid problems that are not being sufficiently treated, put us at an increased risk of high cholesterol, of artery thickening and hardening of the arteries, and increased risk of heart disease, and increased risk of depression and obesity. So it's not only important to treat hypothyroidism, but it's important to treat it properly.
Well, it absolutely is. I know for a fact how devastating it can be. Many, many years ago, I had, being a little bit on the cocky side and always being a workaholic, I ended up running out of my medication for a period of time, and one day led into another, and 2 weeks later, I couldn't figure out why. Suddenly, my skin was so dry. I was cold all the time. My hair was falling out in chunks. And I mean literally within 2 or 3 weeks, Mary. And I couldn't figure it out. I was exhausted. I was getting heart palpitations. And kept thinking to myself, something is wrong. I couldn't figure out what was wrong. And then I thought, oh, my God, is it possible that this is what I felt like many, many years ago, but I had forgotten? And I still don't believe that my thyroid is under the kind of control that I would like to. So I'm going to be one of the first ones to find out. One of the area doctors here in Michigan that I can go to, I know a couple of them and a couple of the holistic doctors around here, but even they sometimes are falling short, I find. I think that, you know, just knowing and listening to you, Mary, and the amount of information that you have presented to us today, the amount of information that's in your book, I know for a fact the doctors are not up on the newer areas of understanding or just in studying in general as to the effects of hypothyroidism.
It's true. I mean, I think that a lot of doctors think that it's a very simple process and that simply by making us what they call euthyroid or in a normal range TSH, that they have done their job. And, you know, there are doctors who will insist that if you are euthyroid, any symptoms that you have nothing to do with your thyroid. And, you know, to a thyroid patient, that's absolutely absurd because you take, you know, someone who had never had a weight problem in their life, and all of a sudden, now that their thyroid is out of whack, you know, they're gaining weight on a low, you know, calorie diet and exercise program. Or you get people that never had a day's depression, and all of a sudden they're struggling with depression. Or people who are slender and working out, and all of a sudden their cholesterol levels are going through the roof, and even though they're being treated for thyroid disease, they have uncontrollable cholesterol. These are very obvious signs that their thyroid problem is not being sufficiently treated. But a lot of doctors would rather look the other way, and if the TSH says that you're normal, as far as they're concerned, their job is done and they're sending you on your way. So the real challenge for a lot of the thyroid patients is to find those doctors, and oftentimes it's not endocrinologists who really understand how to manage hypothyroidism and how to help people really live and feel well. You know, I'll see an endocrinologist in a heartbeat if I have thyroid cancer or dangerous nodules or I'm hyperthyroid and need radioactive iodine treatment or something that's very dramatic like that. But for the average hypothyroid patient who's trying to get the right medicine and the right dose and get rid of these troublesome symptoms, I'm probably not going to see an endocrinologist. I'm going to see a doctor who has the time and the inclination to really work with me to find the right solution.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, a few minutes ago you were discussing the issue of iodine. In this country, and this was originally what I had learned, that people with depleted iodine levels really were pretty rare in America because of the supplements and the plentifulness of the foods here and everything. That in actuality, most of the people, and I myself being Middle Eastern by heritage, that was one of the. They kept no matter where I went, they would always ask me where were you born, what country do you come, what's your heritage. And from my understanding, it was because in certain areas of the world, there is a depletion of iodine, but not necessarily here in the United States. Do you find that that's changing somehow just due to the depletion of the soil, the nutrients in the soil here in the United States?
Well, what we've got going on in the U.S. is kind of interesting because back, 100 years ago or so, we did have some iodine deficiency, and it was primarily in the areas in the country that we call the goiter belt, and that is up in the Midwest, the areas that are far away from the sea, and they were covered by certain kinds of glaciers that stripped a lot of the iodine out of the soil. There were actually parts of the country where it was known that people had enlarged thyroids, and a lot of people had very thick necks and very visible thyroids. And, so you had Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, all these areas that were known as the, quote, goiter belt. Then we had the onset of iodized salt, and all of that salt was being put into all the processed foods. And so we had an entire generation of people throughout the second half of the 20th century that were pretty much not having any problems with iodine deficiency because we were using so much iodized salt and so many of these processed foods. But as people started to get a little bit more focused on salt and processed foods, they started to cut salt out of their diet, cut the iodized salts out of their diet, and start cutting back on some of the processed foods, we started to see an increase again in iodine deficiency in the United States. So some estimates are as many as 25% of the population now in the U.S. is again iodine deficient. Again, primarily people who are either in the center part of the United States where the soil is not iodine rich, and so the vegetables and fruits grown in those areas do not have a lot of iodine in them, and also people who don't eat a lot of seafood or use a lot of products from the sea, like sea salt and seaweeds, which also contain a fair amount of iodine. So we're starting to see a rise again in iodine deficiency, and iodine deficiency actually outside the U.S. is the leading preventable cause of mental retardation among children around the world. There's millions of people that are suffering from iodine deficiency, and it's a serious problem when it occurs in pregnant women and in newborns. So it's something that we need to be on the watch for because it is on the rise again in the U.S. and Canada as well.
Very interesting. I had no idea. Eric from Iowa asks a question. Now, you've addressed a lot of it, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit for him. What causes an underactive thyroid?
Well, there's a lot of different things that can cause an underactive thyroid. The most common reason for an underactive thyroid is Hashimoto's disease, which is an autoimmune disease that causes the body to produce antibodies, and these antibodies sort of chip away at the thyroid and gradually destroy its ability to produce hormone, and eventually, in some cases, destroy the thyroid generally and make it incapable of producing any thyroid hormone. But we can become hypothyroid for other reasons as well. Some people become hypothyroid as a treatment for hyperthyroidism. So they may take what's known as radioactive iodine treatment, which then deactivates their thyroid when it's overactive, but it leaves them with the opposite condition, hypothyroidism. Some people are born with congenital problems. They either have only part of a thyroid or a missing thyroid. That's known as congenital hypothyroidism. And we also have people that have had their thyroid partially or completely removed surgically. This is sometimes used as a treatment for an overactive thyroid. It's almost always done when someone has thyroid cancer, and sometimes when people have nodules or goiter that's extremely large and it may be affecting their ability to chew or breathe, or it's cosmetically unsightly, they also will surgically remove it. But anytime you've taken the thyroid out or chemically or radioactively deactivated it, you are talking about making someone hypothyroid. So there's a lot of different ways to become hypothyroid, and also, as we mentioned before, there's some medications that also will slow the thyroid down and make it underactive. So there's a variety of different things that can factor in, and that's not by no means have I covered all of them, but those are the key ways that we become hypothyroid.
And your site again, Mary?
My site is www.thyroid-info.com. That's the site for my newsletters and my books. And then I'm also the guide to the about.com site at thyroid.about.com, where I have a blog and informational articles and research summaries and other types of information about thyroid disease as well.
Well, absolutely wonderful. And I highly recommend Mary's books. They're informative, they're clearly and concisely written, and the information is broken down so that you can read the whole thing or bits and pieces of it. It's just fascinating and a wealth of information. Thank you, Mary. You have really been very, very interesting. We're a lot of great responses to listening to you. Our audience is definitely pleased. Next week, listeners, we're going to be interviewing Dr. Robert Eifker, past president of the American Medical Homeopathic Association. And that's it. It's a wrap for tonight. Mary, we hope to have you with us again one day, maybe to discuss one of your other books, because this has just been just tremendous. It really has been. Thank you for being with us tonight.
I would love to. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You have a great night. Good night, everybody. And remember, let the people speak.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea wall, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.